You're listening to Ecto Portal, a journey into the unknown with Anthony Anderson and Verna Wilson.
I hope that you are seated comfortably with the light turned down and the curtains drawn.
Hello, once again, to another journey into the unexplored, the unexplained, the unknown. I'm Anthony Anderson, your host, and I'm here with my precarious co-host.
Verna Wilson. What's so precarious about me?
I don't know. Just thought I'd say that.
Oh, okay. That's okay. I'll get back at him.
So what is, you wanted to, just a quick, tell him what our show's about this week before we
It's about Mary Nason, who's known as a witch. We don't know if she was an actual witch in the sense that people think she was, but she was definitely a witch in her own way.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what have you been up to lately?
Well, I've been doing writing, okay. And I went ahead and wrote a new poem lately that was based on a true childhood story. And a lot of people, I shared it with some friends.
That was sad. I read that one. That was sad.
It was very sad. Yeah.
Good, but sad.
Yeah, thank you. It was very sad, but it stayed with me all those years, and I finally put it on paper. So I'm glad a lot of people liked it. And also, there was a special event going on at a club called Bottom of the Hill, mm-hmm. where some groups were playing, and they actually showed in the background a slideshow, like a film, where people donated their photos from the late 70s to all the way through 87 of them, and also their memories, and mostly people in the music scene.
Cool.
And I went ahead and I donated some of my photos, and Greg, my boyfriend, donated some of his photos because mm-hmm. we were both very active in that scene.
Yeah.
So. It was fun night. Saw a lot of old friends I haven't seen in a long time. The groups did a great job, and it was fun.
Very cool.
Yeah.
I have not done much of anything, so I have nothing to tell you. Sorry.
Well, you know, there's times I come on the air and
I'm working a lot.
Okay.
So, my job might be ending. It might not be. It might be a new chapter in my job, but we'll see.
Well,
that's all I can really say.
I hope everything works out in your favor.
Thank you. I hope so, too.
Yeah. You know, we all have periods in our life where we're just not doing a whole lot, but that's okay.
Yep.
As long as there's not drama or stress,
exactly,
we're fine.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Happy and healthy, at least.
Happy and healthy. That's what counts.
All right. Let's go to the paranormal news.
Yeah. Let's go
let's
to the
paranormal. Let's do it. Welcome to the Paranormal News. This week, actually, I'm going to go first with an update. We've done a show about this in the past. We did a show about Lizzie Borden's house.
Oh, yeah.
And the Lizzie Borden
case. I remember that, yeah.
This actually is about this particular location. It actually was sold.
Really?
A new guy actually bought it. His name is Lance Zoll, and he's had it for about a year now. He's the new proprietor. He did a number of upgrades to the building. Again, it's in Fall River, Massachusetts, and the infamous murder back in 1892 murders. Many believe it's haunted. It's been a tourist attraction for 30 years and purchased by Lance in 2021 by his company, tour company called U.S. Ghost Adventures. A lot of people had concerned over the fate of the building with the new owner, but he said to the public that it's in good hands. He has preservation efforts in going on, improvements, changes, a disconnection of an antique stove that would occasionally leak gas, which is very, very dangerous, and that could have, and it damaged the walls and could have exploded the building. Ooh. And he replaced some rotting floors in the gift shop, and because it also serves as a bed and breakfast as well to stay overnight. And they've upgraded the bedrooms with linens, pillows, and he just wants everybody to be comfortable, and so they can get a decent amount of sleep if you dare to sleep overnight in the Lizzie Borden house. The museum of the house has display cases, important pieces of history from the house, artifacts owned by Lizzie Borden, and new pieces that were purchased by him, such as Victorian-era cameras used to take crime scene photos. They also recreated the living room of the residence more closely to what it looked like at the time of the murders. Which
sounds like he's doing that house justice.
Yeah, I thoroughly encourage they recreated exactly how it looked, because that's what people
cool.
want. And he said a new addition is to the murder house gift shop for the visitors is with a macabre sense of humor is an official Lizzie Borden hatchet. You can buy your own little hatchet.
You know, when we did that show, we were actually thinking about talking to the proprietor and getting her on as a guest. She's no longer the proprietor now, but this guy...
Was that the one we did, though? I think we called her, didn't we? And we didn't get much reaction
No, I never... I was going to call her, but I didn't get around to it.
I think it's the Velasque Murder House. That's the one when you
yeah,
got hold
no,
of.
That was the one that I called, where I actually called the owner.
Yeah.
But this one, the Lizzie Borden House, I was planning on it, and I never got around to it because I had a lot of guests to get to.
Mm-hmm.
So it just kept getting last on the list.
So
and
maybe,
then,
we'll do a show with
but
him.
Maybe
with, guy,
maybe
with
he'll
Lance.
Be, that's maybe. What I was about to say. Maybe this guy would be really, I'm not saying she wouldn't have been, but
yeah.
I have a feeling this guy may be really open to talking with us.
Yeah. Well, he's obviously preparing it and restoring it because he knows that he's, if he runs
and he's
a,
really into
if
it.
If he runs
yeah.
USA Ghost Adventures as a tour company, he clearly purchased it knowing it's going to be investigations, overnights.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he sees the potential, but he also wants to respect the history. So that's great.
That's great, yeah.
So what do you got?
Well, I have this one that took place in Australia. It's another video, but this one is really...
Oh, yeah, I saw that. You showed it.
It's so good. It's this couple thought they show what they think is their dead family member walking their dog.
Uh-huh.
And it's... in the middle of the night.
It's in their kitchen, right?
It's in their kitchen, yeah. They're a couple of two children. The dad, his name is Matthew Kane, and he was lying in bed with his wife, Lauren, and they have a security camera, and they spotted the camera while they were lying in bed, and it shows a figure appearing out of their old antiques cabinet and walking... alongside their Australian Shepherd dog before disappearing. And he's 35. He's the
dog?
No. I'm not talking right.
The relative
yeah,
that's dead?
No. Matthew Kane is 35.
Oh.
He works for a construction company. He's
a
construction company manager. I'm not talking right, so forgive me, folks. He admitted that that it bothered him. He had a look of terror that came over his face when... and they're usually a skeptical couple, but you know, if I just saw something like that in the middle of lying in bed and I have a security camera and all of a sudden I spot that, I would have been
so
creeped
I'm
out
assuming
too.
He's laying in his bed looking at his phone, looking at the footage. Is that what he means?
No, they have the camera, like the camera installed in the house.
I know, but if you're laying in bed watching, how could you be scared laying in bed? He isn't sleeping in the kitchen.
Well, maybe he saw the camera.
Because most people have security cameras, can look at all of them on their phone. They can toggle.
Well, it could be on his phone.
Yeah.
I don't know that. I thought maybe the camera was in the room. I don't know.
He's sleeping in the kitchen.
But this creeped him out even more because the cabinet that the ghosts came out of holds the ashes and urns of dead pets and relatives alongside antiques from all over the world. So he thought it was a relative.
Oh,
coming out
of that.
Because of the urns, yeah. And he was hoping that it was a relative and not some stranger walking the dog.
Right.
I think it could be both. And I don't think there's anything wrong if there's a stranger. It could be that there's a ghost was just passing through and he likes dogs and the dog wasn't afraid of him and walked with him. Animals are very sensitive to spirits.
Well, I was impressed by the video because the first thing you see the person walking,
mm-hmm.
and then you see the dog ghost beside it.
But right.
Then the dog ghost looks directly towards the camera,
mm-hmm.
and you see the reflection in its eyes. Like mm-hmm. when you see a dog, you see in headlights, you see the reflection yeah. of the eyes. You see that for a split second or two, and then it turns and it walks away with the spirit.
Mm-hmm.
It literally looks like somebody walking a dog. Now, I'm one that doesn't buy into, oh, it came out of that urn of ashes over there. Because that's,
right.
to me, that's a reaching.
That's what I was wondering, too. Yeah.
I mean, again, who's to say it isn't somebody out walking their dog and has no relation to them?
But he saw the figure come from the direction of the cabinet. That's why he thought that. In his eyes, yeah.
But in the spirits, in the dog's eyes, they could be wherever they're at. And
right.
they don't see the cabinet
they
or
don't.
Anything else.
You
know
no.
what I mean? So I'm not one who's going to buy into people coming out of jars of ashes. I just think it's ridiculous.
I don't think so either. So
it's a little preposterous, kind of.
So, and animals are very sensitive to spirits, so
yeah.
it could have been a relative, but it could have been a spirit passing through and saying, nice doggy, and the doggy's walking with them.
But the eyes, when you look at the video, go to the Facebook page, folks. Look for this article, but when you see the dog's eyes reflection,
mm-hmm.
it's amazing. To
it,
me, that's
really
even
is.
More validation than just a spirit.
I agree.
There's no mistaking that's a dog or an animal's eyes reflecting.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool.
Now, have you noticed that with these articles that we're doing, with these videos are getting better and better. They're
yeah.
not just some blob or some shadow that people say, oh, that's a ghost. There's something
Well, I think technology
that's really,
is getting better. A
yeah.
lot of these house security cameras. There's cameras in almost every room in a lot of these bigger homes.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, people want them outside. They want them on their doorsteps. They want them for their kids.
Sure.
So all that footage is being recorded continuously. And eventually they'll dump it, erase it, and start over again. But you could have days worth, and I think that's why we got all this stuff.
Yeah, and I think it's great. It could also be that the newspapers are getting picky,
mm-hmm.
and people want to submit something that looks very real and doesn't look like something silly.
Yeah. Yep.
And also, people don't want to look foolish. They don't want to submit something that says, see? Look at that on the wall. That's
yeah.
a ghost,
yeah.
and it's some splotch on the wall or something.
Yeah. We've seen that, too.
I've seen that, yeah. So, but anyway, great article.
Technology's just gotten better, and I think people are just, there's more cameras everywhere, more phones
mm-hmm.
are everywhere.
Yep.
We're just able to capture so much more than we used to.
Right. So everybody, that's going to be on the Facebook page, and take a look.
Yeah, definitely take a look. It's one of the better ones.
It's a really good one, yeah.
All right, that's the Paranormal News. All right. So what have you got for us this week? You already said it was a witch, correct?
Well, she's thought to be a witch.
Okay.
And I think, and I would call her that because that's a compliment. But she's a witch in the sense where I think of the true witchcraft, which were the healers and the wise women, the herbal women.
Herbalists
who were... who were looking to heal their community. To me, that's the real witchcraft, not what people think are dancing in the woods and trying to kiss the devil's butt and things like that. That's just somebody...
There's an image, folks.
You know, I don't know of anybody who really would have wanted to do that. You know...
It's always funny what people actually were doing versus what people assumed
they were doing.
Fantasized.
I mean, if somebody were questioning and saying, did you go in the middle of the night and kiss the devil's butt? I would be like, why would I want to do that for? In the dark forest and there's a butt there? No, thank you. I mean, but anyway, let's get into the story.
Okay.
This happens in New England, and her name was Mary Nason. And actually, in Maine, there are two famous and two true stories of witches. And there's a road there called Witch Trot Road, and it's in New England.
Witch what?
Witch Trot Road.
Trot Road. Okay.
Yeah, and it's in New England,
mm-hmm.
and And Reverend George Burroughs of Wells, he was accused of witchcraft during the height of the Salem witch trials, which we all know during that time, you could be accused by a neighbor not liking you.
Attitudes,
or being a little different.
Disgruntled business deal.
And of course, he said he was innocent, and he agreed to prove it in front of the magistrate in Danvers. Mm-hmm. And the Reverend suggested a shortcut to the road that would bring them to Danvers much quicker. And the men later believed that he enchanted them, which brought them to a dark forest that was an evil dark forest. And when they came to a strange high ridge, like a high hill mm-hmm. there, the sky grew dark and it started to rain, and there was thunder clouds, and they became frightened because they believed that he summoned the powers of the devil against them. And there was lightning on all sides, and the horses got scared, and they flew off. And he was calm about it, and he was still trying to go on his way in his journey.
Yeah.
But the party was they hurried through this dark forest as the storm grew worse, and so anyway they hurried along to what would later be called Witch Trot Road, and the storm finally calmed down, and Reverend Burroughs he was still calm, but he was arrested on April 30th, and he was executed for witchcraft on April 19th of that same year, which I feel is really stupid.
Yeah.
Just because of a storm, and they got scared, and he was calm and everything. I mean, he was trying to remain centered, and I feel sorry for the man, in other words.
But manicness is catchy.
Yeah, especially if you're real superstitious and you're walking with you're riding on a horse with a supposed witch and all this. Come on. It's like, use your heads, folks.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Yeah. Okay. So now here's the other account that came from New England. It was about Mary Nason. She was a respected herbalist in the community. She had a knowledge.
Did you say what year she was around?
She was born in 1745, so it was the 1700s. Okay. Yeah. And she was a known herbalist in her community. She was known as the White Witch, actually. And she grew up in the York Village, where she met and married Samuel Nason. They had six children.
Wow.
Peter, William, Susanna, Samuel, George, and Mary. And not only was she a skilled herbalist, but she was also a skilled exorcist who rid houses of demons and inflictions.
Well, that's interesting. There's an offshoot.
And, you know, that's the part that really got to me when reading about Mary Nason, because an exorcist of any kind, a real one who can really do it, is unusual. But especially in that time.
Why would someone who would be called a witch want to drive away evil spirits if they were a true witch? They're contradicting their kind of, you know what I mean?
Right. But so she drove away evil spirits, and she apparently was very liked and respected in the village. To me, in that time, that would have made people kind of a little freaked out about you mm-hmm. and wanting to. I mean, most communities would have been at that time. So the fact that she was liked and respected, and she wasn't persecuted, means that she really had a good reputation, and she must have done her job really well.
What's interesting to me, though, is back then, being an exorcist, mm-hmm. they probably didn't call it that. It was probably called something else. You're driving away the evil spirits, whatever, what mm-hmm. have you, blessing this house. But the fact that she was called on to drive
to
out
it.
Evil
yeah.
spirits, but maybe witch. Sometimes people use witch in a general term, like, oh, they go out and get crazy herbs and make potions and drive out evil spirits from people's houses. She's kind of a witch, you know what I mean?
Right, but apparently she did a lot of healing, and maybe, you know what I was thinking, maybe the villagers thought, well, if she healed a lot of people and people aren't sick anymore, she probably can take away the evil vibes or evil, well, they didn't say the word vibes, that's me talking, the evil spirits in my house, because she's so good at what she does that they'll listen to her.
Yep.
So the fact that she was able to do it and she was respected for it means that she did have a special gift that she was using, and she was actually using all of her gifts for the good of the community. And to me, that is the role, the real role of the witch. And she has my total respect in earning that name.
And can you imagine if she lived 100 years earlier? It would have been really deadly for her.
It would have been, but the fact that she lived in the late 1700s when people were still superstitious, and she was still very liked, and nobody sat there and got freaked out. Anyway, I'm just saying, it's an unusual case where somebody didn't get well.
She didn't get lynched for being a witch.
I should say that, but you know, maybe there were more villages or places that were open to it than we knew.
Well, that's what I mean, though. Mid-1600s in New England, it would have been a dangerous time for
anybody who
did any of that stuff.
But later 1700s...
things changed.
Things changed. Yeah. People were probably still superstitious, mm-hmm. but maybe there were a lot of places that were more open-minded than we knew. Because
possible,
But we only hear about the bad ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, usually they end in drownings or lynchings or hangings or...
or being imprisoned and being questioned a lot. Yep. And yeah, unfortunately, she died. She died early. She died on August 18th, 1774, age 29, after having their youngest child.
Yeah, and she was young.
Yeah, she was very
six
young.
Six kids at 29.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
I know.
And
so,
she had time to go out and drive demons from people's houses.
And work on her herbs.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she... very busy. So she obviously, you know, childbirth back then, they didn't have the care that they have now.
Now, and there's another question. Is that six kids that lived? Was there others maybe that didn't live? We don't know.
Well, apparently the children grew up with their dad. So
I know, but that doesn't mean she didn't have miscarriages or, you know.
Well, she might have.
Children that died from.
She might have had something in between. Because
That happened a lot where the ratio was like, oh, we had eight kids, but we lost three to the
cholera. Oh, that's
cholera
true. Yeah, child mortality was very,
I can imagine.
So the fact that she had those children and they lived was actually a good sign. I mean, that they come from strong stock. But sadly, it's sad that she died so young, you know, with a childbirth. It was probably a rough childbirth, or we don't know why women during childbirth like that.
Yeah.
Died oftentimes, you know.
Well,
childbirth is rough on a woman's body. Yeah,
I mean, fever took a lot. Remember, we didn't have anything for fever.
Yeah, exactly. Nothing.
So,
not for
like
fever.
You said mortality rate was going to be higher for everyone, including kids.
And of course, they had their midwives back then, as well as doctors attending, and the medical help wasn't as.
She probably used her own herbal.
She probably did. Yeah. So, one of the rumors about her is that she loved children, and that she roams the burial ground, but there's also a playground across the street, and a lot of mothers have sworn seeing their children being pushed on the swings in the playground near the cemetery by something. And when they ask the children, they say, oh, it's a nice young lady named Mary. She's playing with them. So, the locals will tell you that the children see Mary Nason.
That's interesting. Again, go back to children.
Yeah, go back to children. Children being open. Yeah.
And no big deal to them.
And if you go to her gravestone, there's her portrait there. It's on the top. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a beautiful portrait. It shows her with her hair up. And it's a very beautiful memorial where they talk about her. It's a gray granite slab. And between the headstone and footstone, the legend has it that the town folk put it there after she died to keep the white witch from rising out of her grave. That there's a...
is that the picture of the metal, the iron slab?
Yeah, the iron slab,
covering the grave?
Mm-hmm.
People always wonder what that's about.
Mm-hmm. So, and there's also another rumor that they put it there because there was livestock that were wandering around. And they were digging up the grounds, probably looking for food.
We've heard other cases where there was witches or a vampire. I think we had a case where they did the same thing. They put this iron cage over the grave so that they couldn't get out.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And we also knew that in Europe, when you see those cages over graves, it wasn't necessarily to keep a witch or a vampire in the grave. It was to keep grave robbers from digging up the graves and selling the body parts to the medical colleges.
That's very true, too.
That was very, very common. People always ask, oh, is that to keep evil in? No, that's to keep evil out.
Well, they mentioned that a wall was actually put up there sometime later to keep the livestock out, and that the great slabs were taken from the graves and used to only line the top of the wall.
Yeah.
And hers was the only one left with a stone in the far corner of the small graveyard.
Interesting.
So they felt it was either for two reasons that stone was put there.
Yeah.
Because they thought she was a witch because of the, you know, her being known for her herbal healing, yeah, exorcism. And they thought, well, if she's a witch, let's just try to make sure she doesn't wander the grounds or the livestock. And considering how well-liked she was, I tend to think it was a livestock thing and they just left it there.
I mean, I know, well, like I said, about the grave robbers in Europe, you know, in Ireland, Scotland, and England especially,
mm-hmm,
to sell the bodies, you know, vagrants and, you know, thieves and stuff would dig up the fresh bodies, sell, mm-hmm, the bodies to the medical colleges, mm-hmm, and nothing was said. And that was an understanding. They'd be paid for them. The colleges didn't say where they got them, and they didn't want to know. But they all knew what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in New England in the mid-1700s, I could see some of that probably existing as well.
Yep, I could see that too.
You know, the colleges?
Of course.
Studying, yeah?
Of course. You know, trying to perfect medical science by learning about the body. So
bodies weren't cheap. They were not easy to come by.
They were not easy to come by, no. So, but her family did move away. Her husband moved after she died to Sanford, Maine. And the family, of course, is in charge of upkeep of the graves.
That's funny.
Yeah. So the family's in charge of, you know, making sure the grave sites are,
yeah,
upkept and, you know, taking out weeds and plants.
Yeah,
and
yeah. Careful.
So, but of course, if the family was far away, he wouldn't have been able to keep up with her grave.
Right.
So the stone was probably left there just because the family moved away and didn't visit that often.
Yep.
To keep the lot. And it's true, the livestock, if they were digging the ground, they could have dug and unfortunately came across a coffin. So they wouldn't want that there. So yeah. Anyway, it's the only grave in New England that has that stone left out of all the graves in that graveyard.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Now, I know you were talking about how kids in the playground next to the graveyard would have someone pushing the swings and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's the other theory, but I have grown. When I first started as an investigator, my theory was, oh, let's go to graveyards. That's where people would be hanging out because their bodies would be there. So they'd be doing nothing but hanging around the graveyards. So I'd do EVPs there. And people would say, well, why do you do EVPs in graveyards? Because why would you want to hang out in the graveyard where your body's at? And I go, well, that's what I was told. And I was doing things that people told me would make sense.
But you have gotten some EVPs with graveyards.
Oh,
remember,
yeah.
Sutter Creek?
I still do. I still,
yeah,
do. But I started to think about it, going, well, let's not use man's made-up rules,
mm-hmm,
about where spirits can and can't go.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, A, you're still trying to prove they exist, and B, who they didn't give you a rule book that says, oh, if you buried my body here, I get to hang around. I can maybe go to the playground next door, but I can't really go any further.
Mm-hmm.
See, as I became an investigator more and more, I'm like, that's all crap.
Mm-hmm.
That's all somebody's made up crap, somebody's bullshit that they want to tell someone else because they want to act like they know what they're talking about. They don't. You can get EVPs. Who's to say? I always say this to people who think, oh, you got an EVP in a graveyard? Well, why can't a spirit go visit a grave in a graveyard?
Of course they can.
And they're like, well, maybe they're trapped there. I'm like, trapped in the graveyard?
Yeah.
Why? How? Who said?
You know, in being familiar with the spirit world myself, this is something that I find, and everybody, don't get mad at me for saying this, very few people really know about the paranormal and the spirit world, what really happens or what's real and what isn't. Very few people know. They think they know, but they don't.
That doesn't mean...
I don't claim I know everything, but the more you get familiar and the more you get near that side of life, or that, I don't want to say that side of life, well, kind of, but I'm not saying you're, you know what I mean, but the more you get familiar with those places and with being in tune with that, the more you find out, and it doesn't, and all these theories that people told you or they think, yeah, it doesn't wash. It just doesn't.
But I also found that the more years I investigate to find answers, the more questions I have than ever.
Absolutely.
Before.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things that I like about you, is that you try to find answers. It drives me crazy when I see somebody say, I'm ghost investigating. I got evidence. I got EVPs. Well, that's wonderful. Good work.
Yeah, but why are you doing it?
But why are you doing
it?
What are you trying to learn from this? Because I feel not only should you be getting evidence and going places, which I think is very cool if you're careful and you're doing it well,
mm-hmm,
but also you should be looking for answers and maybe something that's going to help people understand what's going on after the spirit leaves the body. What are we learning from this is what I wonder. And that's what I like about you, is that you are trying to learn something from it.
No, we have a friend in common. I won't say the name.
Okay.
But the friend says, when you investigate, you should always investigate with another person, always, no matter what you're doing during that investigation. And I thought, you know, as EVP is my thing, it always has been.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
And when I do EVPs, I don't mind doing it with other people who are investigating, but 9 times out of 10... this person's moving their chair, that person's coughing, mm-hmm, that person's digging in their bag to find batteries, that person's over there chatting, that person's laughing. So I like to go off on my own for
a while.
I've
seen you do that,
sit down where I know I'm absolutely still, there's no one around me, and I can do my sessions, and I know if I get an answer back, it's legit. It isn't just mistaking someone else.
Right, because you're off in a spot by yourself.
Yeah, and you control the environment. But this friend's like, but if you got an EVP, there's no one there to witness it. So they'll just say you're lying. I go, well, it's not like any of us are going to get anything that's going to convince anyone of anything. But you know why I do this, though? I said, I investigate for me. I don't investigate for other people.
Right.
Maybe this particular person thinks they have to prove it to other people. I don't. I could care less what you
believe. Your
reasons are different. If you want to believe what you want to believe, you can. But I'm not going to fight you over it. But I do it for me, because I really have questions and answers, and I want complete control over what I'm recording at that time.
And you've written some great articles, and you're working on some great, some really good subjects on the paranormal. So I think what you're doing is really paying off. Now, you know my sister, Linda Walker.
No. Yeah. I never heard of her.
Yeah, she was our newswoman.
Is she famous?
She should be. She was our newswoman.
She owns Baby Secret.
She does own Baby Secret. She was our newswoman when we did the beginning of the show 5 years ago. The first part of the first bunch of shows. She was our newswoman, and she is an investigator herself, and she's a very good one. Linda had a habit of going off by herself and sitting and trying to get evidence. And
the same reason, probably.
Linda got some of the best EVPs and evidence in pictures that I have ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
But I grew up with my sister, and my sister's spirits have always been attracted to my sister. So I'm not surprised later when she started working as an investigator that she captured some really great evidence.
Mm-hmm.
But again, she went off by herself. She didn't sit there and stay with people. And she got it by herself.
We talked about this before, where when I first started investigating, I used to turn on the recorder, and I would record for hours the whole investigation.
Mm-hmm.
Even set up of equipment, I would just record it nonstop and let it run for mm-hmm. hours, people mm-hmm. talking to each other.
Sure.
And then I realized some people, seasoned investigators, like to record little burst sessions of 1 or 2 minutes at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So that they don't have hours of footage of nothing there. They go, you know what? We're going to control the environment, and we're going to have this short little segment that's legit.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that now. I didn't necessarily then, because I used to capture stuff, when two people would be having a conversation and no one else is in the room and there's a third party talking.
Mm-hmm.
That happened all the time. They wanted to interject and add their own two cents.
Mm-hmm.
But now, rather than travel from room to room, I shut it off. I start it. I say who's there. I say whatever contaminants are in the atmosphere, lawnmower, car, whatever, radio, radiator, air conditioner. And then we do the session, and then I turn it off, and then I move to the next room, and then I turn it on again and do the same thing, different room. Here's what's going on. Here's who's here.
You know, when you say that, there's one EVP that I do remember. When you and I were at that Army fort, the one by Golden Gate Bridge.
Oh, Fort Point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we were, and there was a lot of tourists there, and we were trying to capture some evidence in the room, and we were being very polite, asking, who's here, what's your name, what rank were you?
Yeah.
And we were saying, oh gosh, we were saying it, and it was captured on tape. We were saying, oh gosh, there's tourists, oh, people are coming. And all of a sudden, we heard a voice that say, I'll get them out, they're leaving. Remember that? They were trying to help us.
Yep.
And I thought that was great.
See, it's one of those, that's why I used to kind of let it run sometimes. Sometimes I would do a separate session, like if we had an investigation in someone's house, I would let the recorder run while we did their setup. I knew everybody's voices in the room as we set up, but I knew that, you know, I can always record another session when we start.
Mm-hmm.
But if I go back and listen, I find EVPs of our conversations as we're going along. So you never know when you're going to get it.
You never know.
You know, just because you have a question doesn't mean someone else needs to answer you.
Right.
It's just what we want. So, so that talking about Mary at the playground and next to the graveyard kind of reminded me of that whole people believe. You know what I mean?
I would love to visit that graveyard and leave some flowers for her. There's very few times when I read about an actual witch who was a real witch in the sense of the word, with healing and trying to help her community, and people respected her. I mean, I feel bad for the ones that were trying and people didn't respect them.
Yeah.
But it's nice to read about somebody who did the real, who did what I think is the real thing. And I would love to leave some flowers for her. And who knows, maybe
it's just nice to know she didn't want to kiss a devil's button.
Right. It's nice to know that. Yep. And I wouldn't mind going on the grounds and seeing if we can get some EVPs, maybe of her, maybe not. But
you have to go to New England first, right?
I'd love to visit New England. I always wanted to visit over there. So,
we're just buying us tickets. We're going.
Hey. If I have the money,
whip out that credit card. Let's go.
And get a nice bread and breakfast. I would love it. So, but I'd love to leave some flowers for her. And I hope that her spirit is happy and content wherever she is. And that's all about Mary Nason.
Yep. There's another interesting story.
Yep.
All right, folks. Until next time on Ecto Portal, we're going to say goodbye.
Bye. See you next week.
Royalty-free, copyright-free music by Kevin MacLeod and Ross Bugden.